everyone, Megan Marie here. If it's a little bit noisy, I apologize, but we are on the show floor at Nerd HQ at San Diego Comic-Con 2012. Now, because we're at Comic-Con, it means we have access to a lot of awesome talent for this episode, which I think is episode 12 already. First off, we're going to interview Zachary Levi. We're going to chat with him briefly about the final hours of Tomb Raider and his involvement on that project, about his work with Nerd HQ and the awesome charity work that he does. We're also going to do a take five with Carl, answer a couple of pressing questions that popped up because of E3, and we're going to end with a really lengthy and an awesome interview with Camilla Luddington talking about her recent debut as the voice and performance artist of Lara Croft. So enjoy the Crystal Habit podcast, episode 12. So we are here at San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm super excited to have a special guest here because, as I've said on the podcast before, I think people get tired of just hearing Carl in my voice. So I have Zach Levi here with me.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us.
I like that I'm a special guest.
Yeah.
Is it special like Little Yellow Bus special?
You're special as in anyone that's not
You
Crystal.
Are Carl. Right. Yes, exactly.
So where are we? We are here at Nerd HQ.
We're at Nerd HQ. This is my little brainchild.
Yeah, it's your baby at Comic-Con.
It is. Yeah, we started the Nerd Machine two Comic-Cons ago. So this is the third Comic-Con that the company has existed. But the first year was just kind of a soft launch, and we did the first official Nerd Party, and we had a lot of fun. And the next year around, we were just trying to have a little presence, a little booth on the convention floor, and throw one more party, and that just kind of snowballed into our own event, our own mini Comic-Con at Comic-Con. And last year we had a lot of fun, and it was really special. And so we've just tried to build on that. I mean, basically, it's just a giant free event for fans to come and play kick-ass video games that they can't get their hands on anywhere else. You guys, Tomb Raider, will be essentially premiering in the public's hands. Critics, some people have been able to play it, but not the world. So this will be the first time anybody gets hands-on with that. The new Gears of War is here as well.
I'm excited to see that one, too.
Gosh, what are some other ones that we have? I'm looking around the room, but I can't.
Everything's being set up right now.
Yeah, it's all being set up. But it's just, I mean, as a gamer myself, I love the idea of offering a big kind of hands-on arcade for people. And then simultaneously, there's like computers and charging stations everywhere. I wanted it to feel like a really cool nerdy clubhouse. I wanted it to feel like this place where people could go, and if they needed to take a break from the hecticness of the convention floor, they could. It's really right nearby.
I mean, it's a couple blocks away.
And then the entire time, we have these our own panels that we throw that are very small, very intimate, and they're all for charity called Conversations for a Cause. Last year, we raised $40,000. I think this year, between the panels and some other random things I'll be doing, like taking pictures for money, we're hoping to raise about $100,000. So
that'd be great. Well, we talked about on the blog and our different social media outlets. We have the Tomb Raider panel. But what are some of the other highlights in terms of panels? What are you excited about?
Oh, gosh. Well,
everything.
Well,
I know.
Because it's funny how some things work out. So last year, we had a kind of rudimentary ticket selling system. So this year, we really thought we had it figured out. Mm-hmm. And it blew up in our face. There were so many people trying to buy so few tickets at the same time.
Well, it's a good thing.
It was good that people are excited. Well, yes, absolutely. And it ended up kind of working out in our favor a little bit, or rather in the charity's favor, because a few of those panels oversold by double. The shopping cart couldn't refresh fast enough, so we ended up selling twice as many tickets as we were supposed to. Actually, more than double. so we were able to add extra panels in order to accommodate that.
Oh,
so
great.
We're doing a Chuck panel.
Yep.
Obviously, it's the first panel that this cast has done since the show is wrapped, and the first time any of the fans have been able to gather to, you know, talk to us or ask us any questions. So I'm excited about that.
Reunion
of sorts. Yeah. So we're doing two of those because we double booked that one. We double booked Nathan Fillion. He was kind enough to offer us a second one.
Everybody loves him.
Absolutely. Joss Whedon is doing a panel with us.
Great.
Guillermo del Toro is doing a panel with us. Well, you guys are doing a panel with us, and I'll be a part of that one as well. Damon Lindelof. Who else?
Sounds like you guys
Seth Green.
Hit that mark.
We're trying.
And does everything go to Operation Smile?
Every penny of the panels. The
That's
only
great.
Money that the Nerd Machine makes on this event is merch that we may or may not sell. Mm-hmm. I mean, I believe in incentivizing people. If you give them a cool place to come and they dig what you do and who you are,
they'll
and
support you.
Then they'll support you, you know, and that's so I'm hoping that we get traffic through and that people appreciate this and that through that they'll want to buy a shirt.
Great.
Yeah. So, but all the panel money, all that goes to charity.
That's fantastic. I know that's a really cool angle. So, you kind of have provided your incentive for Nerd HQ, but how did Nerd Machine in general evolve? Like, where did that come from? What was your inspiration or motivation for starting it up?
I mean, I guess I just kind of, you know, somebody who I consider myself to be a nerd. First of all, there's a couple of things I wanted to accomplish with Nerd Machine. One of them was offering kind of a life brand for nerd culture. Mm-hmm. I looked around the kind of landscape of brands and clothing and stuff like that and apparel, and there wasn't one, like, you know, solid brand for nerds. There, mm-hmm. If you're an athlete of any kind, if you're, like, traditional athlete, there's Reebok and Adidas and Nike and all that stuff.
If you're into jerseys and branding.
Totally. And if you're into extreme sports, there's Quiksilver and Volcom and Rip Curl and all that stuff. But if your sport is more in line with gaming or
yep.
tech or comics or whatever, there was no real brand for you. You could go on Cafe Press and get some quirky, ironic shirt, but there was no unified brand. There was no brand that, you know, nerds across the board could all buy a nerd shirt or a Nerd Machine shirt and say, I'm with you. We're on the same team, you know. We're into the same things. So that was one thing I wanted to do. And that was, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Ideally, you know, we want to continue to build the company and offer gadgets and gizmos and hardware and software and content. Mm-hmm. Apparel was just the easiest and smartest place for us to start with all that. But then another thing that I wanted to accomplish with Nerd Machine is really kind of turning the tables on the way people view nerds, because mm-hmm. I think that being a nerd just means you're really passionate about something.
Yeah, exactly.
Traditionally, that just gets applied to what the Japanese would call otaku, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you're into anime or comic books or video games and you live in your mom's basement or whatever.
Yeah.
Clearly, you're very passionate about those things. But there are people that are so passionate about basketball that if you were to ask them a question about their favorite team or their favorite player, they would rattle on for hours about it. Mm-hmm. I'd say they're a nerd about that, you
yeah.
know? Jay Leno is a nerd about cars. The guy owns 1,000 million cars. That's a number. I looked it up. he could tell you anything there is to know about a friggin' carburetor, you know?
Okay.
So it's just whatever you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. So I really wanted to kind of tell everyone, look, you're all a nerd. And then thereby breaking down barriers and breaking down the ways that, you know, people get stereotyped, you know, it's not just horn rim glasses and pocket protectors. Mm-hmm. You can be passionate about anything, and therefore you can be a nerd about anything, and therefore anyone can wear a shirt proudly saying, I'm a nerd.
Embrace the term,
yeah.
kind of shift the connotation.
Totally.
That's
I mean,
great.
If we're being honest, nerd is a made-up word from Dr. Seuss, so it's not even, you know what I mean? And, like, geek was a term from, you know, carnivals. Like,
yeah.
there's no... What they've all become now is, you know, kind of in the modern nomenclature or whatever is what it is, but doesn't mean we can't embrace it and make it awesome at the same time.
And we can at events like this, where this
Amen.
Is the entire city right now.
Exactly.
This one thing I love about Comic-Con is the entire city is literally like dripping in
yeah.
fandom,
yeah.
of any type of fandom. So that's what I love about
yeah.
it. Anyway, I'll go
Very
on,
accepting.
I'll go on a,
yeah,
a,
yeah.
a Comic-Con tangent because I love this show. So is Nerd Machine sort of your future? Is acting still where you're staying? That's going to be your vocation? Are you trying to expand into different venues? And is nerd kind of where it's at?
I mean, I don't
know.
You
say a jack of all trades?
I kind
of,
yeah.
You are.
I mean, well, I try to be. I don't know. Look, I think that when you're blessed enough to have opportunity and that opportunity gives you a certain amount of voice or command over something or a power of sorts, you know, you can either utilize that or you can waste it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I saw happening with Chuck and the audience that we built over that time, and I really believe in audience, I really believe in fans. I mean, that's just on a philosophical level as an entertainer, because
mm-hmm.
let's not get ahead of ourselves. Like, I don't believe in glorifying actors to be anything other than entertainers. And that's also, by the way, a very important role in the world. Like, for a while, I kind of was always like, you know, I downplayed it. And I went on a USO tour, and I was at some military bases in the Middle East and in Africa. And it was amazing how many soldiers or Navy men. Navy men don't like to be called soldiers.
Mm-hmm. the things you learn.
Yeah, exactly right. But I'll just say service men and women mm-hmm. that would come up and get a Chuck DVD signed and say, you have no idea how much your show means to me and my family. It's how we connect. Yeah. It's how I can spend my time, you know, 15 months at a time. And so I realized, well, we actually do provide a pretty cool service to people, you know, for escape and to enjoy some time away from whatever their vocation may be. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's cool, you know, to be an entertainer. But I think that you're only as good as your audience. You're only as good as your fans. Mm-hmm. And I think you really need to take care of them and foster those relationships. And so through all that time, I was like, look, I just want to do cool things. I want to do memorable things.
Yeah.
And I believe in being an entrepreneur, and I believe in being a philanthropist, and I believe in incentivizing people. And so as ideas come to my mind that I think are cool things that I would like to do, I want to make them a reality. That doesn't mean I ever want to stop acting or writing or directing or producing. Hopefully all that stuff can all feed into the Nerd Machine and vice versa. I mean, I have so many ideas of shows that I want to produce,
yep.
and maybe they'll all kind of be on our own network that you'll turn on your smart TV in a couple of years, and there'll be a Nerd Machine channel or a sister company that is our content, you know, and mm-hmm. you'll go, oh, boom, that's that show with Zach and Nathan Fillion, God willing, or whatever. You know, I mean, like, that would be amazing. Yeah. And we're producing it ourselves, and we're totally autonomous, and our fans are the ones that support it, you know, and you're not beholden to advertisers anymore. You're not beholden to any of that. It's just, like, pay as you go. Like, I see a brave new world of content, and I want to
so
be right at
the... curating and creating the
yeah,
content.
Yeah, absolutely.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Having a flexible future to do whatever you love.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah. And you know, and all the while kind of believing in the idea of what I call conscientious capitalism, which is it's okay to, you know, to make a buck in the world and to give a buck at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, do things where people are incentivized to help you survive, and you can, in turn, you know, help others survive. Yeah.
That's a great motto. I like that. So when we just recently announced you as the host of The Final Hours, which is extremely exciting.
Yeah.
So when we announced you, we got a whole bunch of people on Twitter going, Chuck, and they're all excited. But then we also got a bunch of people going, Flynn.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You've done VO before. You did Flynn in Tangled.
Yeah.
You've also, correct me if I'm wrong, Halo Reach and Fallout New Vegas.
You're right.
Some parts in that.
You know your stuff.
Is voice acting something else that you want to keep doing
it.
In the future?
Yeah. I think that falls right into acting still, entertaining still, you know, mm-hmm. like I, and in fact, in a really cool and different way, like, you know, it's a challenge to be able to create an entire character with just your voice. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you know, the designers are building those characters, or in Tangled, you know, the modelers, and well, actually, I guess it's very similar in video games and animated films, but you got to animate these characters. You got to bring them to life. There was no mocap. I've never done any mocap. I'm really looking forward to doing that
one
day.
Add that to your list.
Yeah, right. But you're still performing, and you're still bringing a character to life, and I think it's so much fun. And because I love video games, it's fun to play a video game where I'm like, that's me!
Is it kind of surreal?
It's so weird.
I have to imagine. Every once in a while, I'll do temp VO in the game.
Yeah.
And it's just really bizarre. And actually kind of embarrassing, because I'm not I'm not trained in any capacity, so I hear my voice coming out of the game,
yeah.
and I usually just kind of shy away and start walking.
I think it's weird for anybody
weird.
To hear their voice. Unless you're like, you know, those like super famous, like, you know, movie trailer
like
guys, like
my voice.
This summer and this summer only, like those guys love their voice. But everybody else, it's kind of like that answering machine syndrome. It's mm-hmm. like when you hear your voice on someone's answering machine, goes, that's my voice.
Is that really me?
That's me. That's what I sound like.
Yeah.
Like you're going to play this back and I'm going, oh, my God, I sounded so nasally and tinny. What's wrong with me?
At this point, I've been doing the podcast for what, like 11 or 12 episodes now. So I'm getting used to it. And people tell me it's not as offensive as I think.
Yeah.
It is. So I was actually, the next question I was going to ask you is what other roles you'd like to try in gaming. So we need to find a way to get you into some mocap.
Oh, gosh.
Right?
That's yeah, I'd love to do mocap, but whether that's video games or film, yeah, whatever. I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, I have some favorite types of games, but to me, I just want to do cool stuff. Whether it's a title that already exists or has yet to exist or whatever. I just want to do stuff that people dig. I want to be a character in a game where people, you know, at the end of that game go, wow, that was satisfying.
Yeah.
Like, I believe in satisfying people. I hate it when you're a part of something and at the end of it you go, that was all right.
Yeah.
Like there's almost there's
Knock
nothing
the
worse
park.
Than good enough. Like mm-hmm. I'd rather like try with all my might and fail than be good enough. Like
yep.
good enough sucks.
I can understand.
Be
that.
Great or die trying.
Awesome. That's yeah. a good motto. Okay, so any future projects, we can wrap up quick. Any future projects that you can talk about that you're excited about?
Well, yeah, I just, actually just last night, I was able to finally announce that I'll be doing Thor 2.
How exciting is that?
Beyond exciting. It's so cool.
I mean,
cool.
as a massive nerd, yeah. like you're... You
well, I mean, Marvel, you know, was a huge part of my childhood. And even now, like, you know, I'll still kind of check in from time to time. I'm more in the kind of graphic novel world. Like, I talk about a dream role, not necessarily video game, but, like, I'd love to be Yurik in Why the Last Man. Like, that.
Best comic ever.
Oh,
sorry,
so
I'm
good.
Gonna geek out. I love that book.
It's so good.
I'm going to start a petition. You
don't
make a
start.
Great Yurik.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I think so. But anyway, that's beside the point. The point is, when Thor 1 came around, I mean, it's actually a really crazy kind of serendipitous kismet, whatever, but so I auditioned for Thor 1. I got the job as Fandral.
Oh, really?
And then Chuck in the 11th hour got picked up for like 6 more episodes, and I couldn't do it.
Oh, no.
So Josh Dallas ended up doing a fine job with it, but now his show, Once Upon a Time, conflicts with the schedule for the second. So
You're
Marvel came back
chance.
And said, you want to do this? And I was
That's
like, wow,
great.
I mean, I feel like it's kind of meant to be, you know? Like, I wasn't able to do it the first time around, but it came back. It's like that,
awesome.
That old, you know, adage, if you love something, set it free. And
yeah,
what it,
it'll return to
although
you.
Although that's so lame. it's so lame.
Well, that's a very exciting
But I'm super
project.
Excited, and, you know, I get to be this Errol Flynn, Lothario, mm-hmm. Fandral the Dashing, and work with Chris Hemsworth and Anthony Hopkins and Natalie Portman and Ray Stevens. I mean, it's Idris Elba.
Characters.
Like, it's so ridiculous, and I'll live in England for 5 months and be there during the Olympics, and... I don't know. It's just a dream come true.
Awesome. Well, I'm very excited to hear that. That's a really cool role.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for stopping in. We're going to let you go because we're actually about to have you record more final hours.
Love it.
All right.
You're
see
awesome.
You
I'll see you later.
Bye. Okay, so we are still at Nerd HQ. We just had a really lovely interview with Zach Levi.
Isn't he cool?
He's very nice.
See, I told everybody.
Yes. All right, so we do have some other Tomb Raider goodness. We have our Take 5. Were you here?
No, I was traveling last time. Take 5 was on. So did you do it, or did you just make up answers?
I think we skipped it because we had that whole E3 thing, which was like a Take 500. Like
right,
we answered
well,
so many questions that we just
once nobody answered questions when I was away, and I don't know what the answers were.
All right, so I have 5 very specific questions that I've been hearing over and over and over.
So okay, so for just before we start, everybody, normally she shows me the 5 questions. I have not
you
seen
have no
these
idea what these are,
questions.
Which I like. Anyway, I like it this way because then I keep you on your toes.
Shit.
Media training.
Okay, yes, exactly.
Okay, so the first question is, it's kind of E3 related, actually, because people are wondering if Tomb Raider will ever take advantage of Square Enix's new graphics engine, the Luminous engine?
That's kind of a tough question because, you know, what the guys have been doing on Luminous, as anybody who saw, is absolutely phenomenal. And they've been working behind closed doors on that for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a company, that sort of shows the vision of where we want to go. And it shows the vision of how every single studio is looking at the technology that we've got. Whether we, as a studio ourselves, use it is mm-hmm. yet to be seen. But certainly... you know, sort of cross benefits of the technology that we're seeing come through.
Just learnings and best practices
just,
and all that within the studio.
You know, it was built by the team in Japan. So, you know, as we know, even working with VisualWorks, when systems are built that way by that team to operate and use, when you try and take that entire engine and move it across to, you know, to our game, there's a lot of translations, a lot of working. It's built specifically for them in a way. So... I can't talk too much because I don't actually know. You know, when it was presented, they kept it under wraps. And
but we
they
have our own fantastic engine.
We
too,
have our own fantastic
of, like,
engine.
Longevity.
And you know, we're excited to see the company pushing with Luminous. But we have our own. And, you know, we push our engine pretty, pretty hard. Everybody has seen that with this new Tomb Raider.
So no plans, no specific plans, but we're proud of what the company has been doing.
Yeah,
very
no
cool,
no plans
inspiring.
No plans from our stage to use it right now at all.
Okay, so second question. Some fans have spotted a Game Super Window Live symbol used in conjunction with Tomb Raider and are somewhat concerned about some sort of DRM issues. Can you clarify our stance on that or if we are taking advantage of Game Super Windows Live?
No, there's no plans right now to do Game Super Windows Live, so I'm not sure where the logo was seen. It may have been just something somebody else put up, but certainly not from the studio standpoint. In terms of DRM, you know, we've had some great successes with Steam. We are doing a box version, of course, but... you know, they've been great partners in the past, and I have no doubt they'll continue to be great partners. So still more to come on that. We're way away from making that final decision. Right now, we're still focused on getting the game finished.
Absolutely. Okay, well, speaking of getting the game finished, this is another one that came out of E3, and I think that there's just some merit in explaining the strategy behind it. Why do you announce DLC so long before the game has been released? So why? What's the benefit of thinking that far in advance?
So to be honest, it was a great opportunity because we were on stage with Microsoft to be able to announce some of the things that we've got planned. I think we've made it very clear so far that any DLC that we do will basically be an addition to the game. The game will come on day one and it will be the game from start to finish. The DLC that we're looking at is complementary. We haven't given any details on that yet because we're still working through the fine details and kind of coming up with the... sort of the final story of what that will be or what that content is. But I just think it was a great opportunity to be able to get up and announce something as big as that. We're very proud of our partnership with Microsoft, and they were very proud to give us the opportunity to be able to tell people that we have something coming.
Great. Okay, and this is a funny one, but I've actually had it several times. Is the deer killing scene optional in the game? I don't want to hurt Bambi's sad face. We have so many people who are just like, no.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not optional. And the
but
reason why
it's one scene.
Yeah, it's one scene. It's not something that you'll do over and over and over and over and over
again.
Unless
you want
to. It's contextualized because it is part of her growth, and it's something that you kind of go through to be able to see her, you know, get stronger and stronger. But if you do decide to kill a deer a second time when you walk over to it to harvest it, it won't kick in a cinematic the second time. So it's just something that you have to go through first time around.
It's supposed to be a touching scene. It's amazing
it's
that people,
touching.
You have these jaded, you know, these people have been playing games for so long and these journalists who have seen it all and they see the scene and it's very, it is moving.
Yeah, and if you watch, I did the Up at Noon piece with Miller at IGN, if you get a chance, look at his second Up at Noon, the one after that, where he screamed Deborah. And now I call her Deborah. I feel like I need to get it into the credits.
Yeah,
at
the
end and put in loving memory of Deborah.
Deborah the deer.
Deborah was the deer.
Sacrificed herself for the bigger
sacrificed.
Cause. All right. And one of the last questions that we get.
Oh, that's six.
No, I think it's actually five this time. Okay. Usually I try to sneak in six, but
maybe
this time
it's me talking
five.
Too long.
So, will you be coming to insert my show here and showing off Tomb Raider in the new future? Everybody wants to know if we're coming near them. And so I thought maybe we could just talk about
I haven't
about
heard
of
that one, insert my show here. Is that a new one? Where's that? Is it Azerbaijan or Brazil?
On
or
the
what?
Moon.
On the moon?
Next
insert my
hot
game
gaming
here.
Destination. So can we just talk about some of the shows that we've discussed publicly that we're going to be at?
Yeah, well, you know, we're getting into kind of the big period of time when trade shows are on and we're getting out there. You know, this is obviously E3 was the start to it. And, you know, now we're here at Comic-Con and we're going big at Comic-Con. And then we got Gamescom not too long after it. And then we've got PAX and, you know, it's just show after show after show. I know last year, you know, I did a whole long sort of schedule of going from show to show myself. I know we had you traveling as well and we had Brent in South Africa and, this year's not going to be any different, to be perfectly honest with you. We have an export team. Yeah, Eurogamer we will be at. And we have an export team who, outside of the European and the America shows, which are the ones that, you know, we always turn up to and we always drive to show off content at, we then have the export team who are coming to us and saying, can you do Spain? Can you do France? Can you do Italy? Can you do South Africa? And he even asked somebody, somebody asked me, would I go to Saudi Arabia? And it happens to be that show is, I think it's sometime around September, which my second child will be due, and I will not be traveling for about 6 weeks. No, my wife has
6 weeks?
That's the lockdown. So okay. Basically, it's just a couple of weeks before and a couple of weeks after. So unfortunately, even
You'll
with my schedule,
I
have to send you, but unfortunately, I won't be at Eurogamer or I won't be at Tokyo Game Show.
We because won't hold
they
down
are.
For you.
Yeah.
I just discovered a whole bunch of new Japanese Tomb Raider fan sites, so we have to make TGS happen.
Awesome. No, we'll definitely be there. But yeah, all I can say is right now, it's going to be a busy year for us, and we have a lot of plans to be at as many shows as we possibly can.
And hands-on, a lot of hands-on from now on.
Yeah, a lot of hands-on from now on. This is, you know, I'm sitting up here with Megan looking out on the floor at Nerd HQ and looking around here.
Cool.
So far, I can only see two games as prominent, and one is Tomb Raider, and one is the new Gears of War Overrun. And people tomorrow morning will be flocking in here, getting some hands-on.
It's exciting.
And there's a huge screen there behind you, Megan, but 60-foot wide, showing Tomb Raider trailers, and it's going to be exciting. But yeah, from here on in, we're giving people the opportunity to get some hands-on. And, you know, the big thing about hands-on for us, going off on tangent slightly, for anybody who does get to play our hands-on, is that, you know, we were given people the opportunity to sort of get to know the hunting, mm-hmm. pick up the bow and fire it for the first time. And that's very important to us because it's a part of our game which, you know, people will rely on most as they play through, you know, aiming, shooting, and so on, and moving around the space and traversal. And even though this is a shorter demo, we've had to be very careful about, you know, how the demo plays and how fun it is. And we're hoping that people understand that it's not like they're going to be able to sit and play an hour of our game.
Yep.
You know, that's a big thing for us, is that, you know, it's going to be a small portion, long enough to be able to sort of feel the emotion of the situation and pick up the bow and sort of move around the space a little bit, maybe find one or two little hidden gems. But yeah, as with any demo, it's our first time putting it out. And the studio are very anxious to see, to say the least. Yeah, we're very curious to see what people think.
Okay, well, thank you so much for stopping in, and we're going to have a big show. Lots of news from Comic-Con, although by the time I post this, the show will be over, and everybody listening will know that
it was a success.
Yeah. We went big and then went home.
Yeah, so. And make sure we put all the pictures out. I'm sitting here as I look around. I see on the right-hand side there, Zach and Rihanna. But by now, people will know exactly who she is. Rihanna Pratchett, the new lead writer of Tomb Raider. And
not new. She's been doing this for a while.
Yeah, she's been a long time. I just say new because it's like, we've just announced
finally,
it. It's new information.
We finally have a name out there.
Yeah, but no, she's been working this for years. So how we've managed to keep it quiet is absolutely beyond me.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to talk to her at a later date.
Over the next one or two podcasts, we'll definitely get her on. And I think you have a guest tomorrow as well. Is it Friday morning we have somebody we're going to talk to?
So I'll have to put her segment after this one, since you're teasing her. we'll mix it up a bit, and we'll put take five in the middle. But yes, so tomorrow we're going to be talking to Camilla.
Yeah, she's super excited to get on a podcast for the first time.
I think everybody's
going to
be able to hear her voice.
It's going to be cool.
Hear the voice.
Yeah, and
of
the
Laura.
Fact that she is from London, and she is English.
Isn't she from Ascot?
Ascot? Is that Ascot around your neck?
Oh, God. People are going to make fun of me for bastardizing that. But, like, it's Ascot, right? Because didn't Zach make the comment about the things you wear around your neck?
Yeah, yeah.
Which
my geography being what it is tells me that it is still somewhere around London. If not in London, right? Our accent is real, people.
It is, most certainly.
I'm trying to, in my head, I'm right now reciting the names of all the handles of all the people on the forums who were saying, she's not English. She's got an American accent. She's American, put on English accent. I'm not going to call you out, but you know who you are.
You know who you are. Okay, well, thank you for stopping by, Carl.
No problem.
Have much more Comic-Con content coming soon.
Cool. Thank you very much. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
And now we have Camilla Luddington.
Hello, Camilla. Hello. So happy to be here.
It is great to have you on the podcast. And it's sort of like, I know they can't see you in person, but having your voice and having you as Lara, it's kind of surreal. Sort of hear bits of Lara popping through. And we also have Carl.
Not to downplay you. No.
So what we did last night is we went on all of our social media channels and we did a call for questions on our blog, our Facebook, our Tumblr, our forums, and then Twitter. So we have lots of questions from the fans. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to start with some general questions because there was like four or five questions that everybody was asking. So we'll get those out of the way and then we'll get into kind of the more fun specific ones. So first, what is your background as an actor?
Well, I started stage acting in England when I was five. I was trained at a acting school from 5 years old until I was about 18. Mm-hmm. And then I went to New York and trained at the New York Film Academy. And then since then, I've come to Los Angeles. Obviously, I still am in class in Los Angeles, but I think being on set more than anything teaches you the ropes of being an actor, of course. So that is my background.
Awesome. And when did you first get involved with the Tomb Raider project? I know it's been, you had to keep it quiet for a long time,
didn't you? I did. Yeah. 2.5 years ago is when I got involved on the project. And I swear I've never kept a secret for that long. And it's been so agonizing. And I've been bothered so much on Twitter about it by fans. And I've so badly wanted to say. But yeah, it's 2.5 years ago.
The fans are super sleuths. And what they had actually done is they took samples of your voice.
Yeah.
And samples of a couple of other actresses that they thought it could be.
Yes.
And by the time you announced, they'd already figured it out.
Yeah, there was a point where I think everyone thought
so everybody
was
messaging
you. Yeah, yeah. And I even saw something photoshopped of me in a mocap suit, and I'm like, they're so smart.
Yes, they are, fabricating evidence.
Yes, exactly. I love it.
All right, and then what was your reaction to learning the news when you found out that you got the part? Was some part of it intimidating, knowing that you'd be playing such an iconic character?
I just was hoping that finally my brothers would think I was cool. That's the first thought that
motivation.
Went through my head. Yes.
Do they? Do they think you're cool
I'm
now?
Probably not still, to be honest. But I think maybe a bit cooler.
Okay.
When I found out I was in my car, because when we went through the audition process, it was called Cryptids. They had all coded it, and I had no idea it was Tomb Raider. So then at the end of the conversation, when I got the role, they're like, oh, by the way, you're Lara Croft. I freaked out.
Really?
Yes, I really did. Yeah, of course. I mean, she's so cool, and yeah, I was completely blown away.
I mean, that's an interesting tidbit that they kept the fact that it was Tomb Raider from you till the last minute.
They did. Her name was Sarah
when
I was reading the script. Yes. But what's funny is I thought in the breakdown for the character that she sounded like Lara Croft. So when I went in, I actually dressed in shorts and boots.
Uh-huh.
And
you thought you'd kind of figured
it
out? Yeah,
I was like, no, I didn't think I'd figured it out. I just thought she's kind of like Lara Croft.
Oh,
that's how, yeah, I was inspired, which is kind of cool.
So you were spot on in the end.
It was.
Awesome. And so you are from England, Ascot?
Ascot.
I'm not going to forget now because Zach did the little thing, the Ascot thing during
the
final hours.
Yeah,
so now I will always remember where you're from.
Yeah, Ascot.
But you've lived in LA for a bit too. So
yes.
Do you feel like your accent changes at all depending on your roles or where you are? Or?
Well, of course it changes when you get a role. It definitely changes. Mm-hmm. On Californication, True Blood, I'm British. For the last third of my life, I've lived in the States.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's more mid-Atlantic. But the thing is when I go home and I'm around my family, it just gets instantly more English, just
mm-hmm.
naturally. I don't really think about it. And then when I'm back here, the more I'm here, it gets a little more American. So
mm-hmm.
it's somewhere in between right now. It's not something that I think about unless I'm on set and I'm playing a character.
Yeah, I get that too. I get a lot of people, like a lot of the fans coming back and saying to me, who's the American guy being interviewed? Like you all now know I'm Irish, but yeah, you end up changing your accent depending on where you are. Especially when I go home and come back here, people are like, wow,
you got
where
like
do
a,
you live?
A shot in the arm.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah.
Boosted back up. Awesome. Okay, so we're going to go straight into Tumblr questions then. We'll start with that first. So Twin Pistols asks, have you played any of the previous Tomb Raider games to get a feel for the character of Lara Croft, or what sort of research did you do when you were getting into the role?
When I was younger, my older brother had the first game, so when I was allowed to play it, I would play, probably not very well, but I did play some of the first game. And the research I did, well, I sat down with Crystal and I really talked to them about what they wanted to do for the reimagining, where they wanted to go, what journey they wanted to take Lara on. So I definitely did listen to them, and that was part of my research. And then I think I talked about this. I did archery as a kid, so that
mm-hmm.
was kind of fun that I was doing archery again. But I'd never done motion capture before, and I don't think there's a way to ever prepare for that experience. That's you sort of learn on the job.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right, so the second question, which is from F. Yeah, Lara Croft Tomb Raider, which I had to abbreviate because it's such a long, it's the name of a blog. They say, hey, Camilla, I'm loving your work on Lara at the moment. My question is, with Lara being such an iconic character in gaming, do you feel a little pressure about meeting the expectations of both fans and gamers? How do you handle this pressure? And do you ever look online at fan feedback regarding how they want Lara to sound or your performance or anything?
Well, first off, I think, of course, you feel some sort of pressure because there's such a huge fan base behind Lara Croft. that you don't want to disappoint anybody. Mm-hmm. Do I go on fan forums and read stuff? No, I don't. I think that that wouldn't necessarily be a good thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. I read everything on Twitter, and so far I've had the most amazing support, so I've been really thankful for that. But for the most part, no, I don't read that stuff.
Okay. Is that more of like, as an actress, you just do your craft and then
you know what's funny? This is a fun story. One time I was in a bar by myself because my friend worked there, and Will Smith walked in and he sat down with me for an hour and just we chatted, and he said, never read anything online because it's poisonous to an actor.
That's what I've heard. So that's why I asked, because yeah. I hear that's and a pretty common sentiment yeah. among actors.
And I think it's right because, you know, we hired Camilla to basically perform the role, and the role has to be fresh. It has to be only what she reads on paper and how she brings that performance. And I agree in the sense that once the game is done, you can jump on and listen and talk to people. But really right now, it's about keeping the character in the bubble. There's got to be that yeah. bubble where you're not getting anything from outside and you're yeah. focusing on the role itself.
I think I need to just immerse myself in the game when I'm acting. And I don't think it would be good if between breaks I was quickly going on to see what someone had commented on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But don't worry, I keep her updated on all the positive stuff. All the negative, we have to keep that out. That doesn't help. Doesn't help me. I get tearful when I read some of people's comments.
When you see the gifts that they Photoshop of us.
Oh yeah, thank you all you people who like to give my face.
And I think, of course, Pete, you know as an actor that you're not necessarily going to please everybody. There are some people, everyone's yeah. going to have their own opinion. You just hope people that... you really hope that people take a chance, play the game, and just kind of embrace you.
Mm-hmm. And we had the same thing. You know, yesterday was interesting when we were doing all the interviews and people were asking Camilla if she plays games. And we hired Camilla to be the voice, right? To perform and act and bring emotion to it. We didn't hire Camilla because Camilla was a gamer. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like hiring a composer to be an actor and saying, what did you bring? You are hiring somebody for their skills and what they bring to the part. And that's very important to us, is that, you know, Camilla knows games. She's very aware of games, but Camilla lives in the world of acting. Mm-hmm. And that's what Camilla brings to the role. It's something that she's immersed herself into for so long.
Well, speaking of the role then, Violet Story asks, did playing the role strike any particular chords with you emotionally? I know we saw during the final hours that there were definitely some emotions, some high emotions in some of the scenes.
Yes. I mean... have I experienced everything, of course, that she experiences in the game? No, she's going through a really extreme, nightmarish disaster. Mm-hmm. So have I ever been shipwrecked on an island? Absolutely not. But I think that we can all relate to loss. And I think that that's something that she really is feeling throughout the entire game. And, of course, as a human being, you understand that feeling of sadness and desperation. So in that way, yes, I definitely can relate.
So Awestruck asks, what exactly is it like performing in a motion capture studio, and how difficult is it to make things feel authentic compared to acting on a real set? And also, is it physically demanding?
Well, first of all, I had never done a motion capture before, like I said. The first thing I had to get used to is we wear a helmet that has a camera attached to it,
right,
and it's
face.
Inches away from your face. So that was something that at first I thought was going to be distracting. But the amazing thing about it is that you're not having to... because the camera is right there following you, you don't have to be aware of where you're stood, where you're cheating out to a camera too. So in that way, it felt like being on stage, and it felt like I was actually more free doing motion capture sometimes than being on set. And what was the end part of the
question? Physically demanding? Is it tough running around in the suits?
Yeah. Because there'd be some times where they'd put ropes around me, and I'm no exaggerating, they would drag me across the floor, and I would have rope burn, and I would have bruises on me, and I'd be falling off stuff, and it was definitely physically demanding. But that was also realistic. She's exhausted.
Genuine.
I would end up being exhausted, so I think it helped.
Okay. And Hunter Wolf asks, what's the most exciting, funny, or memorable thing you've done since you joined the Tomb Raider crew?
Exciting. Well, actually, I would have to say Comic-Con right now.
Because, isn't it?
Yeah, because
it's a unique experience.
It really is. The other thing that was great, though, was actually doing the motion capture on my very first day. I didn't know that I would be synced to her and able to see her on a big flat screen in front of me. So that was really strange once mm-hmm. I had been suited up, then being able to see her mimic my moves live
very cool.
on a live feed. So that was really fantastic.
All right, now the last Tumblr question we have is from Gamers Area, and they ask, Camilla, if offered the role, would you agree to play Lara Croft in the movie?
Who wouldn't agree?
Carl?
That I want to know.
You probably wouldn't agree to play Lara.
I don't know. No, it's if Camilla wants to go for the role, she can go for the role. It'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I would love to.
That was a very popular one.
So yes, of course. I would love to.
Unfortunately, it's out of our hands.
Yeah.
Yes.
GK
hand. Yes.
Okay, so now we are on to the forum questions.
Okay.
So Rob M. asks, were there any other famous women who also auditioned for the voice of Lara? And I don't know, was there any transparency in this process,
I'm not going to give names, but at the very beginning, of course, there was sort of a vision we had for bringing a particular kind of actress. And I flew to the UK and I met with a fair few. And this gets back to what I said yesterday. Every single time we heard somebody's voice, we kept going, why are we doing this? Camilla's actually nailed it first time and done such
nice.
A good job.
Aww.
So
sweet.
So yes, we did look further afield, but I think it was in the stars. It was meant to happen.
And I, of course, have no idea who auditioned for it.
It'll be a secret.
Yeah, that will stay with me and Daryl as a secret forever.
Okay, so Laura Lover asks, how long ago did you start with the motion capturing and voice recording of the game? Have you finished all of the work at this point?
I started 2.5 years ago. And I am yet to finish. There's only a tiny bit left. I mean, it should only be maybe a couple of weeks away.
Yeah, we're in pickup right now. So the idea, you know, people see the final hours of Tomb Raider. This is the idea that Camilla's coming to her final hours. Mm-hmm. This is like the end of it now, you know, for Camilla. We got a couple of pickup lines and then it's into promotion.
Yeah.
Exciting. Promotion seems like it's going to be the fun part. Exciting.
So far, yeah.
Okay. All right, Carl's stepping away for just a second, so maybe we should ask a bunch of tough questions.
Oh, no.
No, we'll go back into the list. So Tomb Raider asks, which is a nice original name, have you had a chance to play the entire game yet? If not, do you plan on playing and completing the game?
Of course I plan on completing it. It may take me forever. But, yes, I actually was playing the game yesterday, and we're here at Nerd headquarters in San Diego, and they have it all around the edge of the room, so I had to get on and play. And it's a lot easier shooting arrows in motion capture than it is
in
the game.
How bizarre is that?
It's really, here's what's so strange about it, is that I get so into it. I'm swearing constantly. Anyone around me is probably thinking, what is this girl doing? I'm swearing constantly. And I'm saying things like, no, at the same time as Lara in the game is saying, no.
So I hear that similarity.
Yeah. So it's just so strange for me, though, to hear that, too. I feel like I'm actually, it's bizarre. But yes, I am playing the game.
Okay, great. All right, so Adobe Artist asks, if you could have a say in the character development, in what direction would you like to see Crystal Dynamics take Lara? I mean, this is, you know, it's just kind of an interesting one to see your personal take on Lara's character.
I would love for Lara to go to a spa for a few days and just relax.
I think she's earned it, right?
I think she has at this point. I'm sure they'll take us to some awful, awful place. But I just think that, you know, Lara, you really see her grow in the game, and I just hope that that continues.
Yes, I agree. And Jerry C. asks, what are the differences and similarities between you and the current Lara Croft?
Well, I think that I would like to think that I'm naturally ambitious and adventurous, which, of course, she is. And also, I loved history as a kid. That was my favorite subject in school other than drama. Mm-hmm. So that we kind of have in common. But other than that, I would say she's a lot more fearless than I am, and she takes more chances. And I think she's more fearless than anyone I know. But I think that's what makes her heroic. That's what makes her iconic and special.
Is that something that inspires you then? Does it inspire you to be more fearless and to take chances?
Absolutely. I think, I don't see how it couldn't inspire you.
Great. All right, now we're on to Facebook. So,
okay.
And the Facebook crew were particularly interested in some of your acting and adventures outside of Tomb Raider.
Okay.
So Mike Pleat asks, what was it like to work on the set with the cast of Californication? And he says, you were awesome last season.
Oh, well, thank you, Mike. It was amazing. I really did not know, again, what I was getting myself into, because you don't, as an actor, you don't see the scripts for the entire season. You get them that week, and you read it, and I would just flick through and be like, oh my God, are they doing this to my character? Are you kidding? But everyone on that set is so fun. I laughed as much, you know, off set just hanging out with them than I did, as much as I did on and watching it. So it's an incredible show. It was such an honor.
And let's see, PD Vendit asks, how does Camilla feel her and the developer's take on Lara is different from the original. Is it an easier character to relate to on an emotional and motivational level for you? So the original Lara compared to this new Lara.
Well, again, we're going back to Lara's origins and rebooting it. I think she's more relatable. Mm-hmm. The Lara in the past, you know, she really did kick butt, obviously, but she didn't feel that pain and despair that Lara feels in this game that really drives her mm-hmm. to have to do whatever it takes to survive. So I think as an actress, that's much easier for me to pull from, because you relate to it as a human being. Okay, your friend's been killed or whatever's happened, and now you have to survive this or you have to attack this person. And I think that just, again, making her more of a human being helps. And hopefully the gamers will relate more to her, too, when they're playing and root for her even more.
Absolutely. So Kevin, Pulley asks, I really believe Lara Croft to be the first sex symbol in modern games. Is that being abandoned in a new game? Will she be in so much trouble and so early on in her career that we won't really see that glamour to her character? Which I think is an interesting question, because obviously the original Lara was physically very much a sex symbol. But what's your take on this new Lara as being
sexy?
Well,
I think I've said it before that I think her courage and her fearlessness is sexy. I think she does it in style, whether she's in trousers or whether she's in shorts. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that she's not sexy in the game right now. Will she be wearing the hot pants anytime soon? I don't know. That's probably not a question for me, but I think she looks great.
I think she looks great, too. I definitely agree with that. Desiree Campbell says, is Lara in the new game somehow modeled after Camilla, or was Camilla chosen because she looks like Lara? We get this a lot.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. She is not modeled after me, because by the time I got the role, she had already been modeled. Mm-hmm. I think it just happens that I'm this brunette playing her, so people think that maybe there's some similarities.
There was a
correlation. Yeah, but actually, no. There's she is not.
Cleared it up once and for
cleared
all.
It up.
But
yeah,
it's a compliment on both ends, so that works quite nicely.
I would love to lie and say yes.
All right, so where are we at? Christopher Jake Waller says, being British myself, do you feel that because Lara is from a British background that you find it easier to relate more and get into character?
That's a hard one. I think that really to relate to the character, you kind of just have to have those core emotions that mm-hmm. every human being has. I don't really think it depends on what nationality you are. So I think that you just have to be human to really relate to her.
And the last one from Facebook, Dale Andrew Tucker says, from Lara Croft of Tomb Raider to Claudette of True Blood, how does it feel to be given the opportunity to play such large characters that already have huge fan bases? I know for certain I'm 100% pleased you're playing both of them, being a hardcore fan of both series.
Well, thank you so much, Dale. It's an honor, of course. I mean, I feel like I'm just one of the luckiest actresses to get to play such iconic people. So I thank my lucky stars every day, and I love, the best part about it is honestly meeting all the new fans of Californication, of True Blood, whatever it is that I'm involved in, Tomb Raider. Meeting the fans has been amazing, because there are such huge fan bases behind each of the things I've done. I've just been so lucky to be part of those projects.
Great. All right, so we're on to Twitter, which was the last one. So Shaik asks, Camilla, which one do you love most between acting in films and voice acting or doing mocap for Tomb Raider? So where's your heart at?
Where's my heart at?
That's a tough question, because I think it can be multiple places.
Yeah. I think that, you know, they kind of are really different. I almost feel sometimes more free doing motion capture, but they're completely different. I love them both. I really do.
I think that's a fair... I mean, it's like asking... I get asked all the time, what's my favorite game? And it's like, really?
Yeah, it's hard.
They're such different experiences.
They really are, yeah. I wouldn't give up either.
Okay. AlienFan17 asks, would you think about starring in another video game other than Tomb Raider?
Well, I do have some sort of loyalty to Tomb Raider at this point, since it is my first game. But who knows what lies in the future. The process has been so amazing that I would love to experience it again.
And Ray Music asks, this game is about Lara becoming an adventurer. Do you feel like you've had that urge to become more adventurous since taking on the role?
I think I've always had an element of wanting to be an adventurer. As a kid, I was out in my own imaginary world, climbing trees with my brothers. I've moved around a lot ever since I was a kid, too, so I've always liked to travel. And also, I'm a Sagittarius. And apparently, we are naturally adventurous. And also, we're the archer, which is interesting because archery is used in the Tomb Raider game.
That's like a little tidbit that we can
there
take
we go.
Away. Trivia
exactly.
tidbit.
Exactly.
All right. So, let's see. I don't even know how to pronounce this one. Upco Roll. Ask, since you've been acting, I think this is kind of a similar one, but since you've been acting, do you feel prepared to survive by yourself on a deserted island?
I would like to think so. I really would.
You'd be able to find a bow and then take out a deer.
Exactly. I'm sure that there are bows lying around. No, I'm sure I would be awful, but I would definitely think, what would Lara do?
What would Lara do?
Yeah.
You'd have like these bracelets made or something.
Yes, exactly.
And last but not least, because this person's name is Smooshy Leaf.
Oh, nice.
They asked, what is your favorite thing about Lara in this new Tomb Raider? By the way, you're beautiful.
Oh.
Smooshy Leaf
says
that.
That's so nice. Oh, that's so nice. What's my favorite thing?
Again, you know, tough question.
This is a really tough question, but I love how realistic she looks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, to me, it looks so cinematic, and the whole game looks like such an adventure. She looks like such a real person to me, and I think that's what I love about her the most. And also, She's fearless.
Mm-hmm.
I love that quality about her, and I love that she's a real person in this game. So all those things.
Great. That was a sizable segment with you. I think we had you for about a half an hour. That's a lot of goodness. So.
Well, it's fun answering the questions from the fans because
absolutely,
yeah,
they've been waiting patiently. I mean, they've been waiting so
Thank
long
you.
and so long to have you announced. And I promised, as like, at some point when we announce our voice actors, I will get her on the podcast. I promise. So I'm happy to be able to deliver.
Well,
on
that's
that
good because I get these questions tweeted to me too. So it's nice right. to be able to answer
awesome.
Them.
Well, thank you again so much for being on the podcast, and I hope you enjoy the rest of Comic-Con.
Thank you. You too.
And that is it for our San Diego Comic-Con episode of the Crystal Habit Podcast. I hope you enjoyed getting some fresh voices and fresh perspective on the show. If you have any comments, critiques, or podcast ideas, segment ideas for future, feel free to send me a message at community@crystald.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next episode.